Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Happy September, Jim.
Is it?
Yes. Every day and every month is a happy day.
Well, September in Vancouver started off hot and sunny. Usually it's pouring rain by then. So, yeah, it is happy.
We have to be happy regardless of the weather, right?
Well, yes. If you let rain depress you, Vancouver would just shut for 9 months of the year.
That's right.
The Bank of Canada dropping the central bank interest rate again. What kind of an impact is that going to have, especially on Canadian housing?
Well, this one was priced in. That's been expected, the 25 basis point to drop. So that's three in a row now, from five as an overnight rate to 4.25. So that wasn't a shock to anything. And indeed, the bond market has already been rallying in the past few months to reflect this idea of central banks lowering interest rates. And there was no shocks in that latest data. The overarching theme remains the Bank of Canada is concerned about overcapacity in the economy. We have excess supply. We have an annualized growth rate in the second quarter of about 2.1%, and they figured that our actual potential for the economy is about 2.4%, so there's slack there. We've got deteriorating job markets. We've got difficulty for people, fewer job openings, fewer people able to find employment when they're looking. So all of that is really causing concern in terms of the outlook, and inflation has continued to come down. So they're saying basically as long as there's no shocks on the inflation front, they expect to continue lowering rates. I don't think that they've factored in enough cuts yet. I think it's still too conservative because I think the trend is weaker than most the consensus view presently. And like if you look at the fact that the policy rate at 4.25 is still about 175 basis points higher than the CPI rate currently. You're talking about very tight interest rates. And the Bank of Canada itself, they estimate the neutral rate. So the rate the policy rate where you're not restricting the economy, but you're not giving it too much gas is about 2.75. And they're at 4.25. So we're at least 150 basis points tight right now. On that metric, we're, like I said, quite tight in terms of after inflation adjusted rates. And we have this ongoing slump in the housing market, in manufacturing, and that's not just in Canada, of course, which is, you know, relevant to us is the fact that China is in a major slump, that the U.S. economy, manufacturing, is tumbling as well. And that just really looks to us for, you know, how are we going to grow the economy in this environment? We overinvested so much in the real estate sector, of course, during the decade when interest rates were virtually nil. And we put way too many eggs in that basket. And now we're getting, you know, a rollover there in terms of construction and construction jobs. And transactions, of course, are way down. Even as mortgage rates have come off, as I said, mortgage rates have come off the peak significantly, but we're just not seeing a pickup in terms of new purchases because prices remain so high. So it's great that the inflation rate of change has come lower, and I think that'll continue as demand weakens. But the fact is that we're still stuck right now so far with higher prices, like significantly higher prices across the board than pre-pandemic. So the fact that we had that big spike of excess spending and consumption thanks to all the free money and handouts, that really has left us with this, you know, impossible cost structure. And I think we're going to need to get a full-on liquidation mode to really bring the cost down in terms of the cost of goods, in terms of the price of housing. Again, it's not so much that interest rates or mortgage rates are abnormally high. They're certainly higher than, you know, during the pandemic, and that's the base case here that's the problem. So again, renewals, mortgage refis have actually been up significantly this week in the United States, and that really gives you some context because sales volumes are at near all-time lows. And so why are people refinancing when the bulk of U.S. mortgages outstanding had a rate of about 4% and they're currently refinancing around 6 and higher? Why would anyone be doing that, Jim? They're not doing it to buy. They're doing it to try and catch up on their other bills that have, like, their credit card debt and things, student loans, things that are at higher interest rates. So that's why they're refinancing, taking on a higher interest rate just to try and consolidate and bring their debt levels down. So we're seeing that in Canada as well. But the problem there is how much net equity do people have in their homes when they purchased them or refinanced them the last time when interest rates were rock bottom and prices were extremely high, and prices have been weakening sharply in Canada in most areas. So that whole notion of, you know, the room you need between what you owe and what you could sell it for, that market value that people use to, you know, increase their mortgage when they refi, that's really been shrinking drastically. So if refi is not a possibility and people are sort of at the end of their tether in terms of what they can finance or what they can pay in terms of their monthly costs, then you're looking at this spike in sales and inventory levels. And you're seeing that in all the major cities, but, you know, in a lot of major centers in Florida, in Texas, in the U.S., some of the inventory rate have increased almost 100% year over year in terms of new supply coming on the market. So, you know, there was a lot of people hoping that once the central bank started cutting rates in Canada in particular, that you'd get this big resurgence in demand in housing. That really has not happened. And now, of course, we're into the fall season, which is typically weak historically anyway. So I think we're going to see a lot more people list properties for sale here. It's going to be another boost in inventory, which is going to suppress prices further. So that all notwithstanding the fact that the Bank of Canada is already cutting rates, will continue to do that over the next year, and that the U.S. Federal Reserve is expected to cut for the first time in September, of course, this month. But starting from 5.5, again, they're tight, way tight in this environment. So their real rates are at least 2% tight. So that gives you a sense of the fact that, you know, they're starting late. They left rates high for longer. I understand why they did that. In some ways, I'm grateful they did, because we needed to pop these bubbles that were so obscene the last few years. But I think that the mean reversion process is going to continue here, even as they cut rates into 2025. And that's typically when the worst of the stock market losses happen, when they start, you know, cutting in response to the leaping unemployment and the weak GDP.
NVIDIA is possibly under antitrust investigation in the U.S. because I guess they consider them to be a monopoly almost on AI?
Well, so NVIDIA has been this, you know, again, the sort of poster child for all that's been manic in this last couple of years. And we saw similar trends into the 2000 tech wreck top. But so they were bound to disappoint because they have, you know, they've been providing these chips, insatiable demand stories far and wide, but only a certain amount of customers have been buying them, right? And so there's a limited demand of companies looking to add their chips, and they've been pumping out a lot of supply. And so anytime you get any negative news or any sense that that AI story may have run its course for now, that, you know, there's been an undue amount of optimism and jubilance around how quickly that's going to impact revenues. We've talked about that before. There's lots of people factoring, you know, this presumption that AI is going to change the world, but how that actually applies in terms of cost savings and or driving revenue is really unclear at this point. So it was always going to be, you know, at some point there was always going to be a disappointing phase or a reality check coming for this, for the sector and for NVIDIA as the poster child of that sector. So, you know, it was off 9.5% the share yesterday, and $278 billion drop was the largest of any company ever in history. And actually the market cap size of Chevron, the oil company, right, it fell that much in one day. So that just gives you a sense of how obscene these prices have become. You know, the we were writing about in our month-end letter to clients last week that the, you know, the Buffett indicator of the market capitalization of stocks relative to GDP is about 200%. And that is, you know, obscene at all-time levels, off the charts, doesn't make any sense. And so all that means you've just got a lot of air in the balloon and that the downside is magnified because of that.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, why are we seeing so many Canadian real estate developments go under?
For the exact reason that we just discussed in the last segment, you know, the fact that so much money was thrown at the building of real estate of all kinds. Up until sort of from 2010 through 22 when interest rates were so low, and the national obsession became, you know, how can we get more real estate building? Investors flocked to that space because yields were so pathetic in the conventional assets and on bonds, and stock yields have been very low, and so everyone piled into real estate thinking you can't go wrong. If I had a dime for every time I heard people saying, well, you'll never lose money in real estate, and I would just wince and think, good God, what are you looking at? Like, this is such a mistaken view, and yet it was so widely held. And so, you know, now we're on the cleanup phase, right, which we truly haven't had a cleanup phase like this since the, I would say, the 1980s. And it's, again, it's not just that there's this, you know, growing amount of office vacancies and office buildings or commercial spaces being liquidated for fraction, you know, pennies on the dollar. It's that there's just, you know, an average of 20 real estate rental or leasing insolvencies in Canada every single month from January to May this year. So that's on track to have about 240 corporate real estate insolvencies this year, which is 57% more than the year before and 13% more than 2009 when we were just, you know, in the throes of the whole 2008 debacle blow up. Again, Canada had a relatively easy pass that time because we didn't come into it with excessive household debt and we didn't come into it with obscenely overvalued real estate like they did in the United States. But unfortunately, that's exactly the case that we have today. So that's all flipped. So Canada now has, you know, 180% debt to disposable income on households, and we have some of the most heinously overpriced real estate in the world. And, you know, those figures that I said don't even count for all the insolvency filings. So the people that are trying to not complete bankruptcies, but they're just trying to do workarounds or whatever. And so there's a lot, the real estate sector alone has accounted for 55% of the receiverships recorded in insolvency insider in Canada. And that tracks the largest insolvencies in the country. So that's, you know, that compares to about 33% in 2022. Now we've got 55%. So it's, again, it's just this, we built, first of all, way too many, you know, tiny little condos in the sky. Then we built a whole bunch of properties that people couldn't afford, really. And as soon as rates normalized, as they did in 2022 to 24, everyone realized, oh, God, I can't afford to keep this. And then you've got the surging in things like HOA fees or condo monthly fees. Again, this is a long-term story, Jim. This is not something that just happened recently. But there was very inept management of many of the condo trust funds that were common, you know, for common element improvement. Certainly in many places in America, but also in Canada, you know, during the low rate environment, everyone was kind of apathetic and not setting aside enough for rainy days. And as a result, now, you know, a lot of these buildings are coming up for major repairs that are needed. In Florida, for example, if you remember the building that collapsed on the beach there a couple of years ago, and that drove this policy change to say that by December of this year, they had to have sufficient reserves for all the improvements and repairs needed. And that has meant that in many cases, the common fees have doubled in the last year, and people are just dying. You know, not only have mortgage rates gone up, but the fact that the monthly fees are now, you know, in thousands of dollars in some cases, on top of the fact that property taxes and insurance costs have gone up, you know, in some cases double in just the last couple of years. So all this just means that there's fewer and fewer people who can afford to keep or buy these properties, and you're getting a liquidation event, which I think, as I said, is going to continue over the next year and possibly longer.
Vancouver home sales down 17% year to year. Toronto, much worse.
Oh, yeah, much worse. And again, this fantasy that, you know, as soon as mortgage rates came off, it was going to solve everything is just a fantasy. Because the thing is, it's about the prices and all the other costs that I've just mentioned. And the fact that we're now having an erosion in terms of household income by the layoffs that are spreading and the fact that it's harder and harder to get new jobs. You know, again, we've had negative GDP per capita in Canada for the last five consecutive quarters, seven of the last eight. We've got a contraction in that department that is over averaging annually more than 2%. So there's less resources to go around here. There's less cash flow. There's less money to pay things with and absorb these dramatically escalating costs. So that's all, that's got a pressure of its own, and that is what forces both these insolvencies and also just, you know, liquidation clearing events.
China, you mentioned in one of your articles, really making an effort to boost exports. They plan to sell make twice as many cars as they'll actually use domestically. But that's resulted in what looks like a trade war. The U.S. and Canada putting 100% tariffs on Chinese EVs. China right now is looking to perhaps ban Canadian canola again, and that costs producers here $3 to $5 billion. Trade wars, does anybody win?
No, but they're a very human, typical response. So again, the overproduction in the global economy has been enormous. It was only able to absorb what was being produced for a short period of time thanks to near zero interest rates and this compunction of people to add debt. And that kept consumption sort of keeping up with the output that was coming. Now, China was at the leading edge of this because their housing market has been in a decline now for 4 years, and home prices have not recovered. Month over month, the prices continue to drop. This is crushing for consumer sentiment, right? So that's the first thing. This comes after Chinese stocks have also pummeled people for many, many years here. So there's been, in terms of trying to get wealth, the households in China have notoriously been underpaid and had a low general amount of income coming in. So the only way they could really sell the dream to the masses that you too can be wealthy is by getting them into these asset classes and hoping that, you know, bidding the price up long enough, it would continue to elevate their net worth. Well, now that's all been reversing for the past few years. And so President Xi at home decided, okay, you know, we've got this debacle going on where all the property developers are going bust, kind of like what's happening in Canada right now, and prices are, you know, not reviving, and we can't get consumers to go in and borrow more to buy more or to keep this Ponzi alive. And so he really shifted his focus to, fine, we're going to be mass production. And again, so yeah, I was itemizing the amount of, you know, the multiples of everything that they've been producing relative to the world supply, relative to their demand at home. It's just many multiples of that. And they've been doing that to try and keep their own domestic economy going. Meanwhile, their 10-year treasury bond, Jim, has continued to decline through this period. And it actually was reaching an all-time low around 2%, 2.14%, an all-time low. And this was, so this is reflective of this slowing economic growth and poor outlook, disinflationary, verging on deflationary outlook. So the bond market, basically, you know, funds were going long and buying the long end of the curve, and that's driven the yield down. And this was happening yesterday, even though the Chinese central bank has been trying to manipulate this by trying to sell long bonds and buy short bonds. They're trying to get the yields up to make it look more buoyant in terms of an economic outlook, but it's not working. And I think a similar trend is going to continue here, because the more they export these excess goods, the more they flood the world markets, the more they, you know, get them in, the more they overcome demand with excess supply, of course, at some point, again, the clearing events that need to happen. So, yes, it's normal to respond with this tariff impulse. We're going to ban, you know, we're going to make it more expensive for these goods to come in, but they're going to find a way. Like the world, in many ways, you know, the world is very much in need of electric vehicles and solar and all these things that they're pumping out. So it's foolish to think that it's not going to get bought. It's not going to get absorbed, but it's going to take longer than just, you know, it doesn't happen overnight sort of thing. And even with the tariffs that are put in place and the trade wars that happen, yeah, that slows the absorption, but it doesn't ultimately correct the problem, which is, yes, the world needs more of these things, but it can't absorb them at a fast enough pace right now. So I think that's going to continue to be disinflationary, deflationary. Prices come down. Central banks are going to respond by cutting rates again because they're trying to stimulate demand with that same old playbook. I mean, the good news here is that during the cutting phase, and here I should mention as well, that the 10 two-year treasury yield, as an example, the yield curve was inverted for about 780 days, Jim. This is the longest period of inversion. And when I say inversion, I mean that short-term rates were higher than long-term rates, right? So as central banks hiked short-term rates, the long bond did not rally to the same degree. For a long time, you had this negative sloping curve, which was a negative comment on the outlook of the global economy. Now, as central banks have been starting to cut rates, you've got the short rate dropping, but the yield curve is now becoming, it's flat and slightly positive as of today for the first time, as I say, in 780 days. And what that really suggests is that now, you know, you've got, they're going to continue to cut the short end, and that's going to, but if the long end of the bond curve, if the yields stay relatively low, which I think they're going to, because there's not an inflation scare here, there's no big demand boost coming. So what that really suggests to you is that the worst of the downturn now comes. It's when the uninversion happened, it's when the positive sloping curve comes back, that you get the biggest losses in terms of the job cycle, when you start to see construction jobs are really evaporating quickly here because the construction sector is pulling back, highly cyclical. So you've got an upward sloping yield curve, and that really is when the bulk of the bear market takes a hold in terms of the equity market. And we're starting, as I said, from the ridiculous valuations that have persisted during the easy money era. So now we've got stocks with a ton to fall. You know, the S&P 500 dividend yield is 1.3%, Jim. This is worse than the all-time low it got in the 2007 stock market peak just before the Great Recession. And so the TSX is yielding a bit more, 2% and change, but it's basically still yielding less than, you know, the 10-year treasury bond at 3% or whatever, and it has an entirely worse risk profile when you get into a cutting cycle. It's stocks that typically plunge, especially when you're heading into a recession, and the treasury market where the bulk of gains are found. So the good news here is that people that are owning government bonds, you know, for every 100 basis point drop in rates that you see in terms of policy rates, in terms of dropping the overnight rate, you tend to get a 10% total return gain in 10-year bonds and a 21% total return in 30-year bonds. So this is where you can get capital gain on top of the income. Meanwhile, the stock market, especially when you start coming into it with these excessive valuations in recession, you typically see drops of between 35 and 55% on the stock market. So for Canada's TSX, you know, a 35% drop would just take us back to where the market peaked in May of 2008. Believe it or not, about 14,008, and that's just a 35% drop. If we get anything like, you know, the last two cycles when we had recessionary impulses and M2 tumbling and all that stuff, you had more like a 50% drop. So I just say this not to be, you know, to scare people, but to warn people that we have mass complacency around risk because it's, you know, not been very serious in terms of the loss cycle. It's been short and sharp and bouncing back, and people have the highest equity allocation in history right now, basically higher than they had at the 2007 top. So that's going to leave a mark. You know, if we're going into another bear market, as we're well due to have here, and all the signs are setting up, and I was talking about, you know, the leading sectors, the art market, the wine market, the exotic cars. I mean, it's all just in a free fall, and that really speaks the luxury market. Swiss watches, like this, Swiss watchmakers are going to the government and saying, "Can you bail us out? We're having trouble because we've lost a big chunk of demand." So this is all connected. This is the Chinese consumer not going abroad, not having excess capacity to buy things, and it's the wealthy and the, you know, the middle class that are really stumbling in this environment. So I think it's just, it behooves people to look at their risk and see if they can make any proactive adjustments before all of this comes home to roost.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council, Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.